Hello, everyone. This is Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. Excited about this guest. I'm always excited, though. Christina Hoff Sommers is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. She's written a number of books, including Who Stole Feminism, The War Against Boys, and a bunch of other ones. She's pretty well known, well respected. I see her all over the place. I follow her on Twitter, although she doesn't follow me. And that hurts me. Dr. Hoff Sommers, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Good.
I followed you. I get confused on who I follow, but I will follow you.
Okay. That's the only reason why we're doing this podcast.
But you have to watch my video series, The Factual Feminist.
I think I do. Do you remember me, by the way? Do you remember that I interviewed you 22 years ago?
Where?
I was editor. I think I was either editorial creative director. I don't know what I was at Men's Health. And I did one of the first pieces on Who Stole Feminism. And it was and I interviewed you in like 1995.
I was trying to remember that because I think I was harassed.
Yes. Oh, terrible. No, you know who got harassed? I did, because it was such an unusual piece for a general interest men's magazine to do something like that. But I thought it was really important because the book is great. The book, you were one of the first writers to, I don't know, kind of sense this gender, the rise of gender feminism and identity politics, and how pernicious it was and what it was doing to people.
And, oh, I know. I look back at that book and it's still relevant, and I don't want it to be.
I know. It's amazing. And it's like, I just remember after that came out in Men's Health, that I got like a lot of people who enjoyed my work were asking me why that was in there when I was at the gym. And it was just, it had irked. The typical kind of enlightened liberal at Rodale, where I worked, which did, you know, Men's Health. But that's another story. I want to talk to you about this article that you did last week. It was in the New York Daily News. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you wrote this great piece on what I'm calling the perv apocalypse. Perv quake of sexual harassment accusations and resignations and men disappearing left and right. They're going to have to create a perv island. And you wrote this great piece, and I'm looking at the cover, and the cover is striking by the Daily News. There are like 16 men, celebrities of various infractions on the cover, which
right.
is kind of what I think your article was warning against, which is this leveling of all charges. So you
exactly.
on the cover you have Harvey Weinstein, but you also I can't remember who you had. Like, I think you had Jeremy Piven, who may be a pig, but I don't think he's a Weinstein. But there's all different levels, and isn't that kind of what you're concerned about?
Yes, there's a kind of moral panic around this issue. As I say in the article, there's a genuine problem with harassment, particularly in where you have high profiles, you know, celebrities with little accountability in, you know, unusual workplaces. These cases are coming out now. But what's happened with the Me Too campaign and with these whispering campaigns and these lists that circulate is they're conflating, you know, serious harassers or even criminal harassers.
Mm-hmm.
With far less, you know, culpable people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all made as if they are predators. And I was really bothered by this list that was circulated called the men in media list.
Right, yes.
And there were people on there who were, I think they took the names off, but there were some people that they were falsely accused. Others, the charges ranged from, stalking and raping to
weird lunches
or strange DMs. I don't know. It was completely reckless, and mm-hmm. anybody can say anything. And these were anonymous informants. Yet, if any of these men tried to defend themselves or someone came to their defense, that's called not believing victims. Even
right.
in this case, anonymous victims. So it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know what a perfect example of what happens is because every case in it is unique, but the media places them all in one file. And so what you end up having is you have John Oliver interrogating Dustin Hoffman. I don't know if you saw that tape. This happened this week. It was at a film festival in Tribeca. And I guess Dustin Hoffman had been lumped in with everybody else. And I'm not even sure what Dustin Hoffman did. If I remember, he said something creepy to an intern on a movie set. And then he also, he might have grabbed an actress, like, I don't know, in the late 60s. If I'm wrong. I'm not sure. But the thing is, John Oliver looked absolutely heroic on stage interrogating Dustin Hoffman. And Dustin Hoffman's like trying to defend himself, and he's looking more and more guilty. And I'm suddenly reminding myself that Dustin Hoffman is not Harvey Weinstein or James Toback, you know? But I realized that the audience in their heads are overlapping all the behavior. It's like I'm doing it when I'm watching it, and I'm overlapping the behavior so that everybody is tainted. And that's kind of dangerous, right?
That is dangerous. And one thing that happened right after is there was an NBC Wall Street Journal poll that said that something like, I don't know, almost half of women were harassed in the workplace. And they had the picture of Harvey Weinstein with many of these articles. But I took a look at the poll, and what they asked is, did you ever have an unwanted sexual advance in the workplace at any time in your life, your work life? So that could include things that wouldn't be necessarily harassment. It was an unwanted pass.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all put together, and it made it look like the average workplace is dangerous for women. And I think this is a very bad message to give young women. They're already, get a lot of propaganda from gender studies and mm-hmm. these elite schools. And they go into the workplace, and they think there's a Harvey Weinstein behind every corner. And there's no evidence of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, you had in your article had some pretty you ran some statistics that I'm sure most people never see.
The General Social Survey. It's one of the most trusted sources of data in social sciences, and I think the last year they did it was 2014. It was a random sample of Americans were asked. It's just a straightforward question. In the last 12 months, were you sexually harassed by anyone while on the job?
Mm-hmm.
And 3.6% of women said yes. And that was down from 6.2% in 2002. So it looks like that's too much, too many, 3.6%. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of women, but it's not half. Well, of course, that was that other survey wasn't an annual survey. It was a lifetime. So that would explain that. But still, mm-hmm. it would never be that high. And it looks like it's gone down.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not dealing with an epidemic. We're dealing with a problem that could be managed if people don't exaggerate it out of all proportion and turn it into a war on men.
Mm-hmm. What's alarming is I'm always suspicious of any kind of mob mentality, and you see it in all kinds of examples, like vaccines. All of a sudden, there'll be this weird thing on Twitter about vaccines, there's no real court. In the court of public opinion, it's just public opinion, but it somehow galvanizes, and it has to build to some kind of climax until whatever offending creature is somehow expunged. It's like, is the mob now is the online world now the new Justice League in a way?
Well, yes, it's trial by the internet,
mm-hmm.
and it's not good at making distinctions. And I do think, I don't think we're there yet, but I worry, and others do, that we could end up with one of these panics, like ground daycare centers and mm-hmm. satanic cults in the 80s or, mm-hmm. other scares like that. The communists in the State Department. Mm-hmm. All these people lost their jobs in the 50s, the Lavender Scare. Those sorts of things happen. People panic. They exaggerate the threat. And there's a kind of generalized sense of danger. These panics don't solve problems. They create chaos and persecution.
Yeah, and the other thing too, there is this kind of I don't know if I call it an illusion, but when a lot of things are happening at once and they're of different types,
right?
It's overwhelming. Exactly. It's like playing paintball or something, and you just keep getting fired at by different types of weapons, and people feel like the world is falling apart. I would say it's the same feeling people get from Donald Trump. Like when there's a whole bunch of Donald Trump news, people who really hate Donald Trump think the world is ending. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know.
It is kind of the same thing when you wake up in the morning and you go like, there's a half dozen new names. You know, there's a guy in a ballet company. There's a guy in a symphony. I just saw something about Jeffrey Rush, who's this older actor. He had to resign from
Not Jeffrey Rush.
Yes, but I'm reading it, and I can't figure out what he did, but it's definitely a harassment thing. Then there were two people from NPR. The dude
Jacob Joseph.
There's the Prairie Home Companion dude, and he was about him putting his Garrison Keillor, about him putting his hand on a woman's back. And then just this week, there's the host who's in a wheelchair, and his name, I feel like it's Hockenberry. Yeah, so
really?
And his was over some creepy texts, I think. So all of these things are just happening so quickly that as a human being, I don't know if you can
We don't know if they're true.
Yeah.
And the newspapers, I mean, I think the initial, certainly the story about Weinstein, you know, was very carefully vetted and,
right.
You know, they were afraid. But then now other newspapers are doing it. And then what they'll do is they say, this was corroborated by a friend or, you know, mm-hmm. someone. That isn't quite good enough. And now I just saw on Twitter that there's another woman has come forward about Al Franken.
Right.
And you read the case. This is in The Atlantic. I think it was just posted maybe a few hours ago. And she said she took a picture with him.
Mm-hmm.
She posed, and he put his hand around her waist and squeezed.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a waist.
Yeah.
And she's frozen, and then she describes how, you know herself as if she's a survivor of an assault. So they're changing the standard by the minute.
I do think there was a new one today with Franken. See, I do think a lot of the stuff that Franken does is so repetitively similar that I believe that it's like I know two people personally that he's done this to. It's like there's no question.
He has some kind of
he's got a problem. But there's one today that came out where he tried to kiss a girl and she turned her head away and ran out of the room. And it's like this is something that he does.
But then he said it's an entertainer's right.
Exactly.
But that's – I was thinking that must – I mean, it's kind of a funny thing to say. We just don't know the situation.
Yeah, it's just so weird. And it's like – and I think I guess he's going to be speaking tomorrow.
Oh, he's out. How can he stay?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's – and I think the Democrats are wise to do that because that leaves the Republicans
looking
with a problem.
Very bad because then they have –
Roy Moore.
If they're going to sit, you know, him and or allow him to be seated, we'll see. Because he's, mm-hmm. I mean, he's a difficult character from, you know, many levels.
Yeah, and I mean,
embarrassing person.
Yeah, and it's you look at what that case, and it's like, well, that article was carefully vetted. Those people went on record and everything, and it's
and very different people didn't know each other.
Right. Yeah, and but then you understand that you have in Alabama, you have voters going, well, this is just the media out to get this guy, and blah blah blah. And you can see how these things, it's because so many things are happening at once that it's hard to focus. So Moore had the spotlight on him until Conyers and Franken stories broke.
Right.
So it shifted. So you have all of these things happening, and then what happens? The importance of certain ones kind of like lesson, you know, because you're in and because we're just too busy flitting from one thing to the next that we forget. I mean, people have already moved on from Bill Cosby. I mean,
right.
That was a pretty big deal. You know, I mean, I don't know.
I know it just goes so quickly. As you say, we're just overwhelmed. And so, yeah, I don't know. You'll see voters very often don't do what you would predict.
Mm-hmm.
And people are elected. I mean, they're not listening the way we are. I mean, we're in the Twitter universe and social media, and it seems like the whole world's talking about this, and they may not be at all. So,
yeah. Hey, I want to just touch on quickly because of the current state of speech on campuses. You write about this a lot. Where were you? Did you you were on
I lectured at Rutgers University last night.
And how did that go?
I was worried because they'd been told there might be protesters, and Young Americans for Liberty group that invited me,
mm-hmm.
and they were great. But my posters were torn down, that sort of thing. But huge turnout and lots of police, and there were barriers in front of the podium so no one could rush the stage.
It's amazing.
It all turned out not to be needed. Almost the only it was just full of students who seemed to agree with me.
I mean, this is a scare. It really is. It's, but it's like a legitimate scare because people will try to stop you, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've, you know, always, very often they, I mean, I was just at Williams and students, they didn't stop me, but question and answer period, they were screaming at me, using the F word, calling me. I spoke about, I was critical of feminism and certain aspects of the gender studies curriculum, and they called me a white supremacist.
Because somehow it doesn't matter. I mean, that label now is applied to everything.
I mean,
I believe they've even used it on black conservatives. You know, they'll call them white supremacists.
Yes, I know. And it's unfortunately, I kind of understand the theory behind it. That's one of the things I was discussing at Rutgers. But it went very well. And I think maybe the left on campus is just – maybe not as active as they used to be. They might be moved on to something else.
Would you, you know, I saw a conference with leftists talking about this, in which a lot of them say that this isn't leftism because they're so embarrassed by this kind of this militant identity politics that
right.
as a true leftist, they find it to them it was always about class. And now they're looking at this and they're going, this isn't us. But to me, it feels like it's the offspring of leftism. It just seems like it's just more in your face.
You know, it is. A lot of it in the textbooks that our students read is very left wing. But instead of analyzing the United States as an oppressive system of class, it's an oppressive system of race, class, gender, heterosexism, ableism, ageism, on and on. And so they tell the kids that they live in a matrix of oppression.
Right.
This elaborate typology of who has the – well, it turns out it's just people – it's just able-bodied white guys who are bad, and then everyone else is oppressed to varying degrees. And it's creating tribalism, and it's a kind of excuse now for bullying. And they say, if one of these white males tries to use logic and reason to dispute your position, you're just told him to supposed to tell him to check his privilege and stop mansplaining and shut the F up, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's very frustrating. So there's a kind of conspiracy theory about the capitalist heteropatriarchy. But it's in the classroom. That's what bothers me. It's not just something in social media. It's being taught. There's a reason this is happening on social media. They learned it in some of these classrooms.
Yeah, it's validated. And I think there is one way out of it. If you're a white male, just simply self-identify as something else. Wouldn't that be a way out of it?
I know. I thought of that. Just I heard there are some men's rights activists who are deciding they're going to just say they're trans.
Is it Lauren Southern who identifies as a male? And she actually went. She has her driver's license. She's like I would say she's a conservative talker from Canada, but she actually went and had her sex changed and everything. But still is a woman, but just did it just to show that the absurdity of it. And she's now her driver's license says male. So it is possible. There's still time for me to change, Dr. Hoff Summers. I want to be a unicorn.
You're the targeted group.
I am. I see myself as a fluffy
worst
woodland
case.
Creature is what I want to be. Well, what are you working on now? I know you have a video blog. It's The Factual Feminist.
So yes, almost. Well, I try. It's not every week, but it used to be. I have over 50 videos. So I try to keep them short, and I correct a feminist myth.
Excellent.
And when I first started doing it, my mother said, you can't do this every week. How many myths can there be? There's been, you know, even though I was a college professor and don't like to say this about scholarship, but the scholarship I was in philosophy, so not gender studies, but the scholarship in gender studies is full of mistakes.
Right.
And so I spend 5 or 6 minutes addressing, you know, the so-called wage gap and whether or not there really is a rape culture and this theory, intersectionality, what it means and so a sort of a message to, you know, to millennials especially, to counter what they might hear in their classrooms.
Yes. And actually, I mean, that there are a lot of myths. And I think it's so – what's interesting is I do think we bash the millennials and college kids, but I do think they're kind of wising up. I think I'm – maybe I'm being – maybe it's wishful thinking.
Oh, no, they are.
Yeah.
They haven't quite found their voice, but there's a whole group is going to gather in Arizona, I think in Phoenix in April. It's called Kilroy, something mm-hmm. Kilroy Project for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And it's all around free speech. And it's, you know, I think it's just going to be a huge event. And mostly young people, a lot of YouTubers and
yeah.
personalities. And, you know, that I think that free speech is a great issue for young people. And you can be liberal or conservative
right.
that care about that. So, you know, it brings people together. And I think that might be – because that's really under threat. On the campus and in society. I mean, you look what happened to that James Damore at Google.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it could – people say, oh, this is just happening on the campus. No, it could spread to the workplace.
Oh, I think it's actually already there.
Has, yeah.
I think it – you know, they just – MSNBC just fired Sam Seder for a tweet that he had done like 4 years ago. And his tweet was
– was ironic.
Yeah, it was ironic. It was an ironic tweet about Hollywood basically giving a pass to Roman Polanski. And so he made an ironic joke, and he lost his job. I mean, I'm telling you, that's crazy. And I know Seder can't stand me. He hates Fox News. But I got to say, the guy deserves his job back. And MSNBC should apologize and admit they made a mistake. I really think they should do that because they look really –
They totally made a mistake, but – do you think – I mean, it's so obvious that
yeah.
he was you know, unfairly fired.
Yeah.
It's just
– And that's all
– but see, that's the problem. There's – and I was telling the students at Rutgers that what the left does is that, you know, if MSNBC did something they didn't like, they would be, you know, all sorts of messages and efforts and, mm-hmm. you know, petitions. And our side has to do that for free speech and,
yeah.
you know, for this unfair firing in this case and across party lines. I mean, it doesn't matter if he's...
Exactly. It's why, you know, it's like I'm, you know, I think the right should come out and say, you know, Seder's got to get his job back. Maybe they did it as an excuse, like his contract was up. But it was so idiotic that they would – I mean, how anybody could think that he was, like, condoning, like, you know, child rape from that tweet. He was damning
– Outrageous.
Yeah, he was damning outrageous. Hollywood for giving a standing ovation to Roman Polanski. And he got – I mean, it's weird. He got targeted by people, and that's what happened, and MSNBC ran scared. And that's scary because that just means that no one's going to back you. If you're in trouble, no one's going to back you. They're all going to – because they're scared too. I don't know. I don't want to end on a negative note.
I know. We don't want to be negative. No, I think the millennials are going to find their voice. They're going to
yes.
they're going to rise.
Yeah.
And, I mean, every generation faces you know, threats to free expression, and they have to defend it, and they're no different in that way. And I hope they do.
Yeah.
And I see signs of it. But
all right, Dr. Hoff Summers, everybody, check out The Factual Feminist and check out her books. I read Who Stole Feminism? It's 20 some odd years old. It's still worth reading.
And the war against boys.
The war against boys. I forgot.
Yeah,
I forgot.
They're still warring against our boys.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And by the way, there are more people talking about that. It's amazing. But it's actually becoming acceptable to talk about in public. All right, Dr. Hoff Summers, I got to go run and do my little rehearsal for the 5. I hope you tune in.
Great. Great talking to you.
Same here.
I'm going to go check you out on Twitter right now.
Excellent. Take care.